Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Hertz car theft story right after this. You know, there's a word that we use in law called entrapment. Entrapment means that the state's agents or actors have acted in such a way that they have entrapped somebody into a crime. And the courts have said over and over again that entrapment won't be allowed. So when the police conjure up a crime and then induce people to commit those crimes, then it's called entrapment, and it's an affirmative defense. And this thing of entrapment occurs in a number of different ways, and it occurs quite often. So we should all be alert to entrapment. And there was a classic case of it in what was called, or what I called, the Hertz car theft story, when a young man was in the Ada County Jail at the same time that I was. And as is my habit, I spent a little time with him, and I interviewed him. And I could tell that he wasn't the sharpest marble in the drawer. I don't think that he was mentally impaired in any way, but he just wasn't, you know, he wasn't up there with the Henry Kissingers and the David Rockefellers by any stretch of the imagination. And he had rented a car in Portland, Oregon from the Hertz Company. And his intention was to drive over to Boise, Idaho, and visit his sister for a week and then drive it back. And on the way, the transmission went out at a little place called La Grande, Oregon. So he took the car into, or had it towed into, the AMCO service station, and they rebuilt the transmission. And he was, I think he was there 3 or 4 days. 3 days at least, and the contract had run out, and he was supposed to have turned the car in Boise, Idaho, and of course he was late. He didn't call Hertz, and they put out a, well, the car's been stolen warrant, and so when he got the car back, he paid the bill, and then he had a paid receipt from ANPO. And then he went ahead and drove on over to Oregon. Now, when he went through Ontario, crossed over the bridge into Idaho, the Idaho Highway Patrol saw the car, stopped him, arrested him, impounded the car, and put him in the Ada County Jail. Now, as a result of that, he had been in there for some 40 days or more. He was awaiting trial. He had a public defender. And I asked him some questions, and I took his statement and one thing and another. And then a couple of days later, when arraignment came up, in those days they handled arraignments from the Ada County Jail with a closed-circuit television. And while he was being arraigned, I was in the arraignment room. There's about 30 other guys in there. And they brought this young fella up. Now, he had been coached by his public defender. And it was in front of Judge Willis. And when you observe these kinds of behaviors on the part of judges and prosecutors, it reveals a lot about our judicial system and about corruption and about entrapment. And you just learn a lot by watching, as old Yogi Berra used to say. You know, you learn a lot by just watching. And so they brought the young fella up, and they said, now, the judge said, I understand you've entered into a plea bargain arrangement and with the state. And the young fellow said, yeah, yeah. He said, okay, so the judge has about 20 questions that he asks you from a prepared list. And he starts off by asking, now, are you entering into this plea bargain of your own free will and volition? Yeah, yeah. And has anybody threatened you? No, no. And you understand that this plea bargain, I don't have to accept it, and I could sentence you to the full term? Yep, yep, I understand it. And he goes through all these questions. To get this fellow's voluntary confession that he did the crime and that he understands what he did and what the maximum penalty is and what he's agreeing to. This is a contract. That's what this is. This is an adhesion contract being administered by the state of Idaho through their agent, the judge. And so the judge, when he finished his 20 questions, he said, okay, now go ahead and tell me what happened. And so the young fellow started off. He said, well, I rented this car from Hertz in Portland. And while I was driving it over to Boise, the transmission went out. And so I had it towed into the AMCO station. And they rebuilt it. And I paid them $329. And then I took the car. And when I was on my way over here to Boise to visit my sister, and about that time, the judge stopped him and he said, wait a minute, wait a minute. He calls this guy's public defender on the carpet and he says, now listen, it's pretty obvious that your client does not understand the terms and conditions of this plea bargain. He said, now you take him off camera and you tell him what the terms and conditions are and then you bring him back. And so the lawyer did, and so some time went by, and other people were being arraigned. And after about 6 or 8 arraignments, this lawyer comes back into the room, and the judge sees him on TV. And so he says, now, have you had a chance to talk to your client? Oh, yeah, Judge. And does your client now understand the terms of the plea bargain? Yep, yep, he understands. Yep. So he brings the young fellow back up there. He starts all over. Asks him these same 20 questions or so. And then when he gets through with the questions, he says, okay, young fellow, go ahead and tell me what happened. And so the young fellow starts off and he said, well, I wanted to go visit my sister in Boise. So I went down to Hertz and I took one of their cars and went joyriding. And then on my way over here, then he left out the whole story about AMCO and rebuilding the transmission. And I was apprehended by the highway patrol, and I was arrested and jailed for car theft. And now I'm prepared to plead guilty to joyriding. And so the judge finished up. He says, okay, I'm going to accept your plea of guilty to joyriding, and we're going to give you credit for time served, and I think it was 47 days. No fine. And then cut him loose. Now, there was an important reason for doing this. You see, this young fellow was innocent, totally innocent, and his rights had been violated by 47 days. He had been falsely arrested and falsely imprisoned for 47 days, for which he was entitled to, in round numbers, $1,000 a day for the 47 days, plus the false arrest. He had, well, I didn't see it, but he said he had the receipt. And I asked him, I said, well, did you give that receipt to your lawyer? Yeah, yeah. Well, they took it away from you. The police did when they arrested me. You know, they'll. And I said, now, the police know that you have a receipt from AMCO. Even if you don't have the receipt, you can always go to AMCO and have AMCO testify to the fact that, yeah, the car was broken down on these dates. Now, it is true, the kid was a fool. He, you know, if I had a Hertz car and it went haywire on me, I'd tell him, hey, your car is at milepost 87, come get it. And I wouldn't take money out of my pocket to rebuild their transmission on the premise that they're going to reimburse me. And that's because in the contract it says plainly, if the car breaks down, don't you fix it. We will tell you where to take it, or we'll have it taken in. $329 to rebuild the transmission on a new car back in 1983 or 4 was not a bad price. But in this case, this young man had not made the right determinations, right decisions, at least as it related to him at that time. And he made some even poorer decisions, and I suppose it's because of the intimidation, partly, and partly because of his ignorance. And that was, I never would have pled guilty to that. At some point in time, they have to bring me to trial, and I would defend based upon, I didn't steal the car. I rent it, and here's the rental agreement. Car broke down, I took it in to get it fixed. And maybe I shouldn't have done that, but I didn't steal it. And I didn't cause Hertz any damage. And if they didn't pay me my $329, I'd be out the rent plus the $329. But I'm sure as hell not guilty of car theft. And I'm not guilty of joyriding. That case would have been relatively easy to win. Then we come into the federal courts under the Civil Rights Act, and we sue them for false arrest and false imprisonment. And that's why it was so important for the judge to get this confession out of this young man. You see, they lock you up, and then they threaten you, the police do. And if you don't plead guilty, well, you're going to be sentenced to 5 years in prison for car theft. And the police are not subtle about it either. They tell you very plainly. They play the Mutt and Jeff routine on you, and they tell you, we're going to put you away for the full term. Then the public defender comes in, and he's working with the state. I mean, after all, he is paid for by the state, isn't he? And he tells you, this is the best deal for you. You should take this deal, and if you don't take this deal, you know, you're liable to end up in prison for 5 years, and there's nothing more I can do for you. But if you take this deal, you'll get credit for the 47 days, and that'll be all the time you'll have to spend, and there'll be no fines, and you can walk. And to a guy that's by himself, locked up in jail, being worked on by his own public defender and the police and now the judge, I don't know of anybody that's ever been able to withstand that, absent students, law school students, who have been instructed and know what to expect or what they're entitled to. This intimidation is it's heavy, and I don't deny that. And if you can't withstand that intimidation, well, then you're like this biblical proverb that says, the wicked flee when none pursue. The wicked flee when none pursue. Now, this young fellow was intimidated, and he pled guilty, and he walked out of there. But now he can never sue them. See, he's now barred from any remedy. And now he has this misdemeanor conviction, which will follow him all of his life. It's better than a felony, no doubt. And they offer you that. They say, hey, listen, we'll prosecute you, we'll convict you, and then you'll have a felony on your record, and on top of that, we'll lock you up for 5 years. And like as not, they probably would have done all of the above because of this fellow's ignorance and his inability to defend himself. Now, this happens to people every day of the week. Multiply that times thousands and thousands of times. You see, there are about 40,000 of these police agencies in the United States. And in Miranda versus Arizona, the Supreme Court of the United States made this observation. They said, every one of these police agencies will violate somebody's civil rights at least once a day. Now, that's 40,000 criminal acts committed against citizens every day. Now, take 40,000 of these criminal acts by the police against citizens times 365 days in the year, and that's 14,600,000 criminal acts perpetrated by the police against citizens every day. Now, go to the FBI crime statistics, and they run around 14 million crimes per year committed by criminals against citizens. Boys and girls, the moral to this story is the police commit more crimes against you and I, the citizenry, than do the real criminals out on the streets raping, robbing, and mugging us. Well, isn't that just real special?